Tom Brady clones dog. Mondays with Mike.
Mondays with Mike. Mondays with Mike.
Cool. Okay. I guess we can move on to the redistricting craze. Now, I just saw on NBC that they mentioned that California, and this was popularly done, passed Proposition 50, allowing a redistricting. Usually the redistricting of congressional districts, because Congress people are elected district by district, and the state board has got to say what those districts will be. It seemed to me that the name of the game, up until very recently, was don't gerrymander. But now it seems to be states are gerrymandering to counteract other states gerrymandering in the other direction. What is this world we're living in? This is so far, this is like, if you told me that I would grow up into this world where states would deliberately gerrymander, I'd be like, you're nuts. But here we are, bumpy ride for 2025. I'm waving my arms in the air. I don't know if that translates over the audio. Is this irresponsible? I don't know what I'd say to that. Or is it a matter of if one side does it, it would be foolish for you to not do it? That we need, when's this partisan warfare going to cool off? And when are we going to get back to standards of polite, I don't want to say gamesmanship, but in a certain set, norms of a civilized contest? I'm a little bit at a loss here for how exactly to phrase it.
Okay, I'd say no, it's not irresponsible that they do actually have to countermand the redistricting and gerrymandering. So if one state, like Texas, is redistricting so that they add a whole bunch of seats, then it doesn't surprise me that California also is doing that, because that's where the power base is in the Democratic Party right now, is California. And if they have the ability to do it, they're going to try, because otherwise it's giving up before the game is even done. This is democracy, right? This is just how the game's played, because it goes back to that idea of safe seats and competitive seats, that if the only seats that ever have any real contest are those competitive seats, then you have to have a fixed number of safe seats for each party, or there is no competition at all. One side would always just win. And so that's, I think, what California is doing there, is they're trying to figure out a way to address what they perceive as the Republicans trying to circumvent the existing social order, as it were. Because the existing system has a number of swing districts, but not that many. And most seats are, in fact, safe. I know it seems strange, but there is an effort to apportion the districts in a manner that's fair enough for Republicans and Democrats to have a few representatives here and there, but not an overwhelming number one way or the other. That was the past system. But the current effort clearly seems to be headed in a different direction. The Democrats would be fools if they just capitulate and roll over if they have the opportunity to make sure that they have at least as many seats created as are created for the Republicans. That you want to have a number such that there's not a situation where they have a sizable majority created. And if this is the way they have to do it, this is the way they have to do it, right? Like, it's, California is a big enough state that they can do it, right? Because they have enough that districts are drawn by population. It's based off of the census. Every district has a certain number of people that a representative represents, because California has so many people. They have a lot of districts, which means that they have the opportunity more than other states, smaller states, with respect to the Democratic Party, to actually contending with what's happening in Texas. Because Trump is trying to tip the scales, right? He was essentially telling all these states, you got to redistrict such that I have a undisputed majority so that it's veto-proof, right? So that essentially if Trump does things, Congress technically could impeach him, could override his vetoes if he tries to veto stuff that they pass and actually get things done, right? The whole issue is about stability of the country, right? If you have a situation where in a two-party system, one of the parties is severely diminished, all of a sudden, it's not as stable. That's a recipe for disaster. That's how you get people like Trump running the show and doing annoying things like withdrawing grants and funds for states he doesn't like and pardoning his friends and people who support him. That's how you get this like extreme partisan situation, is because there's no real need to compromise. There's no real need to negotiate or work together if they've got all the power. And the way you check that is you create opportunities for them to get out of power. And that's where the redistricting is really important. It's not irresponsible. It's not foolish. They have to do it to maintain parity, because the current system is structured in such a way to maintain parity, to maintain a balance that, yes, there's a competition, but it's with narrow margins. This would create no competition. If you guarantee a certain number of safe seats over the swing states, then whoever gets that, they win the race. They have the majority, period. So yeah, I think we're going to keep seeing this effort done from any state that has the ability to do it, is that so long as these red states keep trying to redistrict such that they're trying to make it a veto-proof majority, or rather the override of the veto, if you have enough numbers, you can do that. And there's no real way to check that exercise of power. This is the time. If the Democrats don't do it right now, it may not be quick enough before the midterm elections. So it has to happen now, right now, which is why it happened, right? It has to happen when there's the opportunity to make it happen, which was this past election that just happened a few days ago. That's what happened. Because it's not going to suddenly change between now and the midterms for a lot of these states that are trying to redistrict. This was the opportunity. So here we are.
I definitely see what you're saying in terms of, it's like an arms race right now. And to not participate in an arms race would just be stupid. Much as we might wish for a better system to emerge when the dust settles. I feel, again, here's pathos. I just feel that it's a, would be a bad development that it would persist long term. I'm thinking about what I want to emerge afterward. And I'm thinking, I like the old system okay, where it was, yeah, you had a lot of safe districts because there was a preponderance of agreement, both in blue America and in red America. And are you going to erase that? That would be like both sides-ism in order to try to erase where a preponderance has really developed. But I don't know. If I like competitive districts in some places, why don't I like them in more places? And where is the ideal? So maybe we shouldn't say that we've gone from competitive elections to gerrymandering now. But we should say we went from a few competitive elections to fewer competitive elections. But do we want more at the end of it? I don't know. But I think it's important to think about. What do you have ideas for of the political system you'd like to emerge afterward?
Oh, at its most basic, the system we have now further ensures that there's a two-party system as opposed to a more-party system. There's serious arguments to be made that the current system we have now is not very effective at actually getting anything done, that it's entrenching power too much in the hands of too few. It effectively is limiting the ability of citizens to actually accomplish big things, because there's not as much incentive on the parts of these individuals in safe districts to actually do anything, right? Because they know it's smooth sailing. So honestly, I like parliamentary systems more, or honestly, like a nonpartisan redistricting committee similar to what they had in California would be better. But the circumstances we're in now are such that the two parties are trying to leverage what power they have to further gain more power. Is that good? Is that bad? Probably in some respects. It further creates difficulties for any kind of third party to ever gain any kind of foothold in the system. And look, competition breeds more success. That if you have this sort of staid, non-competitive political system, that's where you get people that aren't really invested in even participating all that much. Half the electorate sits out. They don't even vote. If they think that they have no real influence in the outcome because of the redistricting and the gerrymandering such that these seats are huge wins for one side versus the other, then there's even less interest to even participate. It's a foregone conclusion, right? And so a system where you had like open primaries, or you had people who didn't actually disclose what their affiliation was with any party during the election that they actually had to run on issues, go to debates and make arguments, and people would actually vote for what people are arguing for instead of if there's an R or a D next to the name. Maybe that would be more effective, but we're not there. We're at the winner-takes-all system, and winner-takes-all system means that you have to have a huge tent party to even compete. That's the way it is. And that's where then you have to compete within those parties to try and create factions. And that's how you get the Tea Party or the MAGA movement, or you get the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, is where you have divisions within the party to try and etch out like unique policy positions and paths that can still be accomplished while also winning elections. It's tough. It's not easy. But the ways to address it are just so vast and expensive that I don't know that they're going to happen. Publicly funding of elections is one way where you remove the party influence completely of funding any election, that if you meet the minimum standards and you win the open primary, you're in, right? And you get the money and then you run. Not going to happen with post Citizens United, so we're stuck. Because where the money is pooled is within those two parties. They have the networks built up for donors, for creating a political base that can actually show up and win. And it's really tough to make a third party in the US that actually succeeds anywhere, because they've got this sort of, the two parties have this sort of stranglehold on all the districts. Really tough. Yeah.
Cool. Maybe we want a system that encourages more people to get involved. Maybe that would be a good system, but it's not where we are right now.
Yeah, if I have one last thing to say about gerrymandering, it's just that it invests so much power in the state legislatures in terms of how they exert that power, that it's so different state by state. There's no national consensus on how to redistrict, that some states have committees, some states do it through the legislatures, that it may be better at some point to have a constitutional amendment that everyone has a national standard for how these districts are apportioned. But until that point, we're stuck with what we've got, which is this weird hodgepodge.
You want to move on to Tom Brady clones dog. This was like man bites dog, but man clones dog. So I thought that Tom Brady was the guy from the aughts who would like kneel and say a prayer or something like that when he got a touchdown or something. And then I Googled Tom Brady kneel, and it was about BLM. And I thought, oh, maybe I'm like somehow conflating him kneeling, and maybe there was some other football guy. So, shows what I actually know about football. I'm actually able to pass myself off as somebody who understands football in a conversation with even people who understand football. I don't know how I do it, really, because I don't have any idea who the players are anymore or any of that. I like watching the game, but I don't devote mental energies to it. But Tom Brady clones dog, and I joked to my clown's self. So that's my opinion on it. So he invested in this technology company, and now he's paying not hundreds of thousands, they said, mind you, not hundreds of thousands of dollars, merely tens of thousands of dollars to clone his old dog. It strikes, maybe I am tone deaf in this. People do really love their pets, of course. But if it's a clone, is a different... A clone is a different animal. Just because it's the same genetics doesn't mean it's the same individual dog. But I put my cards on the table. What do you think of this?
So I'm on the fence on this one because it's innovative technology in the sense that cloning technology has always been something that they've been trying to do and not necessarily succeeding at all that much. If you think of Dolly the sheep and the problems that happened with Dolly the sheep. But in terms of the economy, I think it's great that there's people innovating. They found something that ostensibly works, and it's supply and demand, right? If there's a demand for this, they create the supply. That's jobs for people. And it's a great thing for innovation because it's not cheap, right? So if you create value for people, it's a free country. If you want to clone a dog, you can, right? Who does it harm, really? And also, I think in terms of some other things. My understanding is it's the company that is trying to revive the woolly mammoth and that revive the dire wolves, the endangered species and the extinct species. And my thought there goes like this: if they come up with a way to make money cloning people's dogs or pets or whatever, then they could also use some of that money to do the really important work of saving endangered species and bringing back extinct species. If this is their bankroll, so be it. I'm fine with a guy selling hot dogs if he's also curing cancer, and he uses selling hot dogs to cure the cancer.
But what if the hot dogs, caused the cancer? No, but they don't.
That would suck, right? That would be terrible. Yeah. But it's like, people have to make money. However they do, they gotta eat and live. If some guy owns 1,000 taxis, and that's how he makes money, but in his off time, spends all that money curing cancer or investigating some like rare orphan disease to fix it, okay, great. That's my thought on that, is that there are people out there in the world who they are really good at making money. They figure out a way to make money in an innovative and unique way. They do that. And then they devote a huge amount of their time and resources to like helping people, to building shelters, orphanages, and paying scholarships, all that stuff, right? If that's how they get there, fine, great, wonderful. The fact that it's Tom Brady talking about it means that we're talking about it. Because it made the news, right? That he's using his celebrity to get it in the news, and here we are, right? In terms of, is it something that most people could do? Answer, no, because it's extremely expensive, right? $50,000 is more than a lot of people make in a year. Are they really going to allocate a year of what they've earned just to cloning one pet? Probably not. But, like with any technology, if you have the early adopters paying through the nose for something, eventually, if it becomes high enough in demand, then it becomes cheaper. Where this technology could be really useful is for food. If we can come up with a way to clone cows or chickens or any kind of creature that can be raised for food that's cheaper than the current process, I don't know what that process is, but I imagine it involves like, all I know from the limited understanding I have of it is that like certain like horse lines are very expensive for racing horses. It's not cheap. It's really expensive to have certain types of animals from certain genetic lines. From that standpoint, if they can actually make this technology at cost, cheaper, more effective, then it's got applications that are more than just pets, right? It's got applications for food. It's got applications for research, for science, that could be more useful than the current system we have. That I think is good. I don't see a downside to that one. It is silly, right? And it also sucks for the existing dogs and cats and animals that are in shelters right now, because you would think that if somebody's rich enough to clone a dog, they're certainly rich enough to adopt an animal, two animals, three animals. They like pets if they have a pet. So the only impediment would be that, oh, it's not my perfect Fluffy or whatever that I'm cloning. It's an animal that needs help from a shelter. But it's, you can rescue dogs. You can train them. You can hire trainers. You can hire people to help you. But they're not, right? And that's the one downside there, is of the pool of people who could adopt a dog and take care of that dog because they have the means, this would limit or reduce that pool, because it creates an opportunity for them to just get their same pet back. And so there is that detriment. That's like with any technology or anything. What are you going to do? If somebody doesn't want to adopt a dog, they're not going, period, even if they can.
Yeah. I think actually this has been a pretty good example, because you convinced me. And it's a good example of initially I, and perhaps others can generalize this to themselves, have this reaction based on pathos, I would say. Probably it was pathos. I thought about, oh no, but there are dogs in the shelter. You don't need to make another dog. Get one of the dogs out of the shelter. That was my initial reaction. But you're pointing out correctly enough that, yeah, the pool of those people who are going to get the dogs out of the shelter might diminish slightly. But if we get the technology out of it such that we can help the endangered species, that's extraordinarily important. I don't know how to quantify that. It's like up there. And then I'm also thinking, oh yeah, if a cattle herd is decimated and you can only grow it by generations, then there's food insecurity there. But if you had livestock cloning, where you could go, you could get the big herd suddenly, that's food security. it would be important for the technology to exist. Boom. Convinced Bud in 10 minutes. Nice job.
I think actually a lot about manned flight. So when planes were first starting out, it was a hobby, right? That only those who could afford to build and fly the planes did. But eventually they figured out a way to make it an application for everybody so that we could actually fly in commercial planes from point A to point B. But it has to start somewhere. At least in this case, it doesn't surprise me that the wealthy are the ones who start with the cloning of their dogs because they can afford to. It's the same deal with private space technology right now. Like NASA's not doing some of the stuff they used to. And so there's private commercial companies that are filling the gap. So Elon Musk, Bezos, that guy from Virgin.
Richard Branson.
All these space people, the people who are doing the shuttles, right? The applications of what they're doing aren't going to be felt in, I don't know, 10 years, 20 years. But if they get there, we're going to be able to get resources from the asteroid belts. We can go to other planets, all that stuff. You have to start somewhere, right? If government's not going to do it, someone has to. We would hope. And it's the people with money to burn. That they have money to burn, that sucks, right? That means they're not paying people as much as they perhaps could. If all the money sort of funnels upwards in like a money vacuum, it all just pools with the dragon. All the dragons sitting on their hordes.
Instead of trickle-down economics, it's suck-up economics.
Yeah, it's funnel upward. Exactly. It's funnel upwards economics.
Vacuum up.
The point there is, okay, so any advances in technology, like any serious advances, are only at the whims of the very wealthy now? Is that where we're at? Like, that if you make it so difficult to actually start a company and invent something and distribute it to market to make money, that the only ones willing to even try are those who can risk a great deal because they can afford to lose a great deal? Is that where we're at? I guess that's where we're at of human innovation. When I saw the article, my immediate thought was actually, if you've ever seen the movie Coraline, where they taxidermied all the dogs on the wall and they had just a huge wall of taxidermied dogs. I was like, okay, that's what I thought of, is you're just going to have people cloning their dogs over and over again. Okay. But then I thought there's got to be an upside to this, and it's that. It's the endangered species, extinct species. It's providing a bankroll for the people who do this technology to innovate and to figure out more applications to help humanity. That's the end result there, I think. And if they get rich along the way, so be it. It's the same with plastic surgeons, actually, that there's applications for plastic surgery for burn victims to help repair their faces, help graft their skins and all that, and give them some measure of stability and ability to move through the world. But there's also all the things that plastic surgery do that is purely cosmetic. That's just a money grab. Okay, if you get one with the other, right? That you get these highly skilled surgeons who do help burn victims, but they have to make money too. They got to eat.
Yes. Mondays with Mike.